The world's last male northern white rhino has died. Fortunately, scientists can keep the species going by using DNA from Steve Bannon. There are still 100,000 working payphones in the United States, which might come in handy after your third iPhone breaks this year. And finally, senators have introduced a bill to protect animals on planes after a dog died on a United flight. You know, such tragedies wouldn't happen if we just armed all dogs. The Trump Report starts now. Live from Los Angeles, California, AfterBuzz TV and America's Voice, this is The Trump Report. Yes, indeed, this is The Trump Report. Thanks to everyone who's joining us at a special early time. And if you're just watching the archive, then, you know, thanks for watching anyway. We appreciate that as well. But we are here because there's so much to talk about. Would you agree that there's a lot to talk about? As always, well, as usual, joined by Chelsea Galicia. Can say hi to the people.
Hello, people.
And Scott Moore. Say hi to the people.
Hey, everyone.
See, it's very awkward to not get the Twitter in because then I'm just like, say something. Dance. But any case, yeah, there's really a lot to talk about. And you know, I don't know where to start.
You can start with the poor rhino. I was most sad about that.
You did seem pretty sad about it.
I am.
Don't worry. I'm sure they ate him afterwards, so it's fine. Yeah, they didn't let him go to waste.
Yeah, that does make me feel
better.
That
makes it much better.
Well, I was going to say, I only said that because I knew that that's absolutely the way that it would make you most upset. So, you're welcome. Anyway,
porn stars?
No. I mean, let's start off with the least fun thing to talk about, another school shooting, and we're not going to really dwell on it because... unfortunately, that's the world we live in now, where for the most part, we don't dwell on it. You know, the last one, it seemed like it was really in the news cycle for a while, but now it happens again. And then it's, you know, no doubt the same partisan rhetoric on both sides will, and I don't mean that in a white supremacist both sides, the literal both sides will weigh in on that. And, you know, we'll be right back where we were before.
Unless it gives more enthusiasm to this weekend's march.
That's right.
It could. I think that that would be great if it added something. But let's see.
Right.
Scott, I will start with you with that topic. Is there anything? This is the worst part about this. Is there anything left to be said?
No, and it came back to, like you were saying earlier, there was just the political back and forth because it happened in Maryland, and the Republican governor was blaming the Democrats in their state Senate and Assembly for not getting him a bill that he thought was decent for school security already done and to his desk. You know, and then you have the U.S. senators from Maryland also saying basically the same thing. They're both Democrats saying, you know, look, we're doing enough hand-wringing, basically. Like, why are we not actually moving forward with any of these bills in the U.S. Congress? So, you know, there still needs to be things that need to happen, and it just hasn't happened yet. But hopefully, like you were saying, Chelsea, that this lead-up to the march on the Saturday the 24th will be a catalyst to help keep this in the spotlight, much like the women's marches were in the past 2 years and the other marches, of the immigrant marches, that hopefully will keep this going. And as we get closer to the midterms, that this continues to be in the spotlight for people running for office this year to make a positive change.
Yeah, I think that obviously is the biggest impact we'll have from this, is that it is something that, you know, everyone running for these midterm elections will have to address one way or the
right.
other.
They'll have to answer it.
Whomever their base is and whatever it is that they feel like they need to say to get elected is what they have to lean on. Chelsea, when you hear that there's another school shooting like we heard today, what are your thoughts, your immediate thoughts?
Well, of course it was like, oh gosh, here we go again. But then I learned something pretty recently that even I was surprised that I did not know before. But did you know that there are actual Federalist papers? So these were papers that the Constitutional Convention members wrote to explain what their thinking was behind the Constitution and the amendments, and that there is a Federalist paper on the Second Amendment explaining what it was really for, and that it is not for individuals to bear guns. I don't know if we want to go into the entire length of what it's about, but check it out, people. There are Federalist papers on it, and you'll see that it is about a militia, similar to what we have as like a National Guard right now. It was not intended, according to the Federalist Papers, which is the closest thing we have to asking these people, what did you mean when you drafted the Second Amendment? So I thought that was really interesting. And I thought it was interesting that it hasn't been brought to light sooner and that I didn't know about it sooner. But I guess I just learned about it when I was supposed to.
I mean, it is interesting. And, of course, it also clearly didn't have assault rifles in there because those didn't exist. And we've seen that that's been struck down even in the Supreme Court, that there is not necessarily a right to have assault rifles and that states are allowed to have their own laws, you know, like in California being more strict than other states and those sorts of things too. So it is interesting, and it helps in the gun control movement in a way to say that it's not all about, you know, having to have as many weapons as you can have because it's a right.
Right. Well, let us know what you think. If you're watching on YouTube Live, you can, of course, comment in the chat, or you can always tweet us at ABTV Trump Report ABTV. See, I did it wrong. by the way, now we are going to move to talking about the seeming revolving door at the White House, and that's a great opportunity to showcase the thumbnail for this week's episode, which was made by our friend Marissa, who is helping us out in the booth when she has a moment. I know she will share it with you, and it's an art form. You know, look, there there are a lot of artists out there who have created great works. Personally, these are the sort of things that I would like to have framed and on display in my home. So for those of you watching on YouTube, you can see right now there is a revolving door right there.
That's so great.
And there he is. As Scott's laughing because he's like, I want to see him shown out. And, before we know it, maybe that's what you'll
get. If we could animate it and show all
right.
The
people,
that's
just crazy. Super fancy. But that would actually be fun. So if somebody at home wants to take this and add a little animated graphic.
All the heads flying out.
So thank you, Marissa, for that.
She's a genius. Every week, it's just...
Yeah. Okay. I definitely agree. And we will talk about the revolving door. And when you have a moment, Marissa, if you could bring up the chat so we can see whom is joining us at this early hour. Well, let's talk about, you know, last week, I believe we were able to talk about Rex Tillerson last week.
Yes.
It's all a little bit of a blur as to whether or not we actually cover stuff or if I just cover it in my personal life.
Or cover my head.
So Rex Tillerson replaced by Mike Pompeo and Gary Cohn. We talked about that. And McMaster, that happened after us. And also Andrew McCabe, the FBI's deputy director. That happened just on Friday. So it's one of those things where I guess this is the Trump administration seems to an outsider, it's sort of like those Final Destination movies where it's just inevitable and no one is supposed to survive it because it's preordained. And it's just a matter of time and place. And if you kind of scoot by one thing, well, something else happens, you know. And the worst for me, I don't know anything about Andrew McCabe. You know, maybe he's not a great guy, but, you know, he was a day before he would have been able to be eligible for his pension.
According to Fox News, his pension is not going to go anywhere, even though he was fired.
Well, look, I don't know. I think he was fired, but he probably was on the job for maybe, I don't know, a couple more weeks. I don't know how that part works. But it's still the timing, you know. It's when you hear that, it's like, you know, it's like in the Lethal Weapon movies. You know, poor Danny Glover was always 2 weeks away from retirement. What if he got fired at the beginning of Lethal Weapon 1? You know, this is how I look at the world. I don't know how the rest of you do. Scott, some of the names that I threw out, are there any thoughts about why they're gone? Is there any surprise that they are gone?
I think I'm still surprised that Kellyanne Conway is still there. I thought she was going to be on the list a long time ago.
Yeah.
She violated the Hatch Act twice. I kept thinking at some point she was going to be gone before a lot of others.
To overextend the horror movie metaphor, I believe she's Jason from the Friday the 13th movies. You can literally do anything and she shows right back up. You know, right after the credits, she just pops out of the water or whatever. So she's apparently going to be all right. She's around for a while.
Yeah, apparently. But none of the other ones have surprised me. I think, again, it comes down to the timing. Like we said last week about Rex Tillerson, it seemed that the timing was a little suspicious because we've been hearing about it since October. I think the Andrew McCabe thing, again, there's been back and forth on that too, of when that was appropriate, when that wasn't, and what he did or didn't do was fireable offense, and why they waited till, you know, a little over 24 hours before he could get his full pension. So again, it's the timing, and of course a Friday news dump doing it at Friday evening, it lends itself to feel like it has a little bit more of a political influence to it. And I thought it was ironic that it was Jeff Sessions having to do that, when you keep thinking about how Jeff Sessions is, you know, gotten a lot of wrath from Donald Trump, and how long is he going to end up lasting in that job? And then, you know, you hear about some of the other ones where you're thinking, I think McMaster still hasn't happened yet, but that was going.
Well, that was, been, you're right. Yes, I was a little premature on there, on that.
And they've been talking about it, but it's kind of the same thing with Tillerson. Now that we know it's there, is it going to be a couple months from now? Is it going to be, you know, anytime soon? But it shows how really disheveled and disorganized this administration is. And also, even people just don't stay there very long because they can't tolerate working with him, and it doesn't look good at all. And I've just never seen any other administration have this much turnover so quickly within just a little over a year's time.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, look, there's always turnover. People burn out for legitimate reasons. It's not a good fit. This seems excessive
for just a little, for 14 months.
Well, I mean, I'm not there. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's not excessive. Maybe there's more people that could go. You know, and also on the hit list, if you have your administration bingo card,
yeah,
you have Hope Hicks,
yep.
Rob Porter, which I don't think he was looking to leave, but he had to. And then Brenda Fitzgerald, who had purchased stock in Japan, Japan Tobacco, while serving as director of the CDC. We call that a whoops. And, of course, Omarosa, who, I mean, he just loves to fire her, obviously. Like, that's the relationship. So,
although she officially resigned.
Yeah, sure.
You know. I think that's the difference between resigned and fired. Who are the ones that on the resign list that were pretty much fired, and which ones left on their own accord? And that list gets a lot smaller when you start looking down that list.
Yeah, and of course, we go back a little further. We have Tom Price. We have Gorka, Bannon, and so many more.
I just have this ringing in my head. I have the best people. I'll have the
best people.
Well, he just didn't have them yet. He doesn't have the best people. He will have the best
eventually.
People. He just hired this bunch of stiffs that he has to fire. And by the way, honorable mention has to go to the Mooch. I would be upset if I forgot to mention the Mooch. You know, it's funny because Reince Priebus, to me, seemed like the guy that was...
That one might have, like, made sense. Like, that, Trump never really liked him.
Right, but he seemed like the most logical hire. In fact, I think when he was putting the cabinet together on this show, I was like, well, look, that's the kind of guy
you
need.
Right, that's what we talked about.
And that is the kind of guy you need, but if you're President Trump, it's not the kind of guy you want. In the chat, by the way, a moment ago, Jillian said, I don't know how you guys pay attention to this without losing your minds. Who's to say we don't?
I think I already lost my mind, and that's why
you were able to come back around.
Right, because of that. Lost a long time ago.
Lots of meditation.
Mm-hmm. When you hear all of this, Chelsea, and you know, none of it should be a surprise, but who are the sort of people that – I know you're not here to give advice to the Trump administration. But who are the sort of people that you think, you know, would be a good fit? I don't, it doesn't have to be named. But
I don't know. Like the best people?
Well, the best
That's
people.
That's what he promised.
But what do you think qualifications should be for people
that – I don't know.
They
could spell the name of the department that they want to go. They don't want to eliminate it. They actually have worked there. Ideally, they've worked private and public sector. That would be good, right? At least for like a minute or two. I don't know, maybe a degree. Like, I know that the thing right now is to talk crap about people spending way too much money on degrees. But if you're in the White House, in the cabinet, can you have a degree related to what you're hired for? I can't believe I'm saying that this should be the bare minimum requirements, but it kind of they are.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I definitely agree with that. And I don't know exactly what it takes to get a job in this White House. But,
not much.
Well, when you see all the people who, you know, aren't there, that's what we find out. And we are joined in studio. For those that can see us on YouTube, you'll see Dr. Christopher Metzler. Go ahead and put your headphones on. We call those cans in the business. This is what happens in Los Angeles. Oh, spin that back around the other way.
The other way.
Yeah. Got to keep the signage out.
So okay.
Always be closing
and
if you want the knife set.
With
I was about
I
the brand.
Jacket.
Yeah. Thank you.
Look at that.
But this is what happens in Los Angeles. There's two drops of rain, and all of a sudden, traffic is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Chelsea was running late. Scott had to run here in the rain. and, you know, I just travel in a gigantic plastic bubble, so I was fine. anyway, Dr. Metzler, remind us where people can find you. Are you Dr. Chris Metzler on Twitter?
Yes.
And what is the website?
Dr. Christopher Metzler.
See, I knew it was different. That's why it I didn't is. Want to say it.
Yeah. We're trying to figure that out.
Get it all streamlined. Yeah, exactly.
Streamlining is good.
Well, what we were talking about when you walked in is the fact that there's a bit of a revolving door, it seems, on the Trump administration. We've seen a lot of high-profile departures in the last week or so. What do you personally attribute that to?
Well, it's difficult to work in the Trump White House. In large part because people are thinking about how much dissension can there actually be? How much can they actually say? Do they follow the president's agenda or do they follow their own agenda? It's extremely difficult to work in the Trump White House. You have to have a very thick skin and you have to decide, you know, how temporary is this going to be in terms of your career? So that's extremely difficult for people to work in the White House.
Yeah, and I'll pose to you the same question that I just asked Chelsea. What sort of people do you think they should be hiring? You know, I mean, whether you want to give advice to President Trump or not, what kind of people do you think should be hired to work in the White House?
I think it needs to be people who have a general view rather than a very specific view. See, the problem I think that we have with this White House and with the nation as a whole is we're so separated from a partisan standpoint. It should be the opportunity to serve all Americans rather than simply serving a slice of Americans. And I think that's a large part of the problem there. And so I also think it has to be people with subject matter expertise. The problem, however, is that the president fundamentally believes that he, in fact, knows a lot about everything. And as you can see, just kind of from, you know, the way he's starting to comport himself, his swagger, all of that kinds of things, I think he feels much more comfortable in the role. So he keeps his own counsel rather than seeking the counsel as so many presidents before him have sought. And that presents a bit of a challenge.
Well, and also, just from a practical standpoint, he does have his family in and around the White House, and those are people that have provided him counsel for a long time. So rightly or wrongly, those are the people that he's probably more inclined to listen to because of the history he has with them. Even if Jared Kushner's not able to go in as many rooms as the White House as he used to be, or, you know, there's a little bit less clearance than there was, it still makes sense that those are the people that he turns to.
Well, let me just say a little thing about clearance, though, because I think that's something that's fundamentally misunderstood by the public. So there is official clearance and then there is clearance. There is nothing that prohibits the president from having any conversation with any person at any time about particular topics, whether they're national security topics or not. And so, yeah, officially there isn't that clearance. No, there isn't the clearance officially. However, in conversation, in the residence, all of those kinds of things, mm-hmm. nothing prohibits the president from declassifying that information to have a conversation to someone else. So let's just be clear.
Right.
If
you work at the State Department and you have a top secret memo on your desk, you don't get to go home and tell your wife about it. But if you're the president and you maybe want to call some of your celebrity apprentice friends, I don't know, George Takei, Gene Simmons from Kiss, and you want to see what they think about something, you can just be like, well, what do you think about this? And you can ask your family something. And I guess the president is not held to the same standards as somebody who's just an officer at the State Department.
No, it's completely different. Yeah. And let's also consider the physical space of the White House. There is the kind of public areas of the White House, and there's also the residence. When you're in the residence, who knows? With any president, what happens in the residence is just that. It is a conversation that's held in the residence. And so let's be clear about that.
In the chat, R. Scott Brown points out that he is the declassifier in chief. So thank you for that, Scott. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the plans that the special prosecutor is making and some of the tweets that President Trump has in relation to it. So we're going to take a very short break, but we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the Trump Report. Christian Blatt with Chelsea Galicia, Scott Moore, and Dr. Christopher Metzler. We appreciate you being here with us again, Dr. Metzler. One of the things that we see happening is President Trump doing his what he feels like is his own damage control. But I think it's actually the opposite of that. When he goes on Twitter and he tweets out attacks on Mueller, McCabe, Comey, you know, all of these people, I don't think that actually helps his cause. Scott, what do you think about the latest weekend tweet storm? It's hard to keep track of all of them, by the way. I completely understand that.
But yeah, it's sort of like if he is so innocent, he should not even say a word about it and not tweet about it, of course, and just let it run its course. But the more that he gets involved with it, the more that it's seeming like he's trying to hide something. He's either admitting his guilt. Even if, you know, you go back and say the McCabe firing was not politically motivated, it feels more tainted and politically motivated when you're tweeting about him and then you're tweeting about Mueller and the investigation over the weekend and once again calling it a witch hunt when you see that it's been ongoing and there's been real indictments happening. So it is in his best interest, and I know his legal team would be telling him that. Chelsea, if you were on his legal team, you'd be telling him that, to not be tweeting about this situation right now, and he continues to feel that that's what he needs to do, and it does make him look bad. And we heard, you know, that part of the reason was over the weekend is that they were starting to submit the questions, apparently, that Mueller wants to ask Trump, and I think that got him all riled up again, apparently.
Yeah, Mueller, suppose, or, you know, his office team, yeah, sat down with Trump's team, mm-hmm, because, you know, everybody's team does, yeah, everything. I would love to have a team, by the way.
You gotta have people.
I'm your team. I'm your team.
Well, okay, well, great. You guys can be my team. Yes. Great. So which one of you wants to go pick my kid up at daycare after this?
Me.
All right, great.
He's cute.
And Chelsea will take care of you. Anyway.
God, good. Wish Felix luck.
but Dr. Metzler, your thoughts, sort of with what Scott was saying in response to, well, President Trump's response to, you know, the feeling that the sharks might be circling a little tighter.
Yeah, so there are a couple of things. I think, first of all, you know, with the whole idea of his counsel and kind of what they're saying, I'm not sure that his counsel is serving him as well as they should have, because I think from the very beginning they should have told him these are serious issues and that, in fact, it won't be over by Thanksgiving or Christmas. I mean, we learned from the Ken Starr investigation that, you know, a special counsel has unlimited powers. And so I think that's one. Two, you know, he's kind of trying to play in two areas, the legal, the court of law, and in the court of public opinion. And so I think what he's doing with the tweets from the standpoint of the court of public opinion is he is saying to his folks, his supporters, hey, this is actually what's going on. But then you have the legal issues. Again, if I were advising the president, I'm with Troy Gowdy on this. I would say to the lawyer, be quiet.
Yes. The lawyer speaking out, like, please let this investigation end. No, that he says, I pray this investigation end.
It's not good.
Crazy. First of all, what lawyer wants to stop representing their client?
Yeah,
they bill by the hour.
There are so many billable hours. If
a lot.
Yes.
So if he's praying that this investigation ends, he's praying himself out of
a
job.
Yeah. I was
very
confused
bizarre.
By that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that, look, I think that a lot, we're talking about the revolving door before the break. I think a lot of the people who maybe have been shown the revolving door have been shown it because they said, you know what you need to do is keep
quiet, lay just low, keep your head down. Everything's going to be fine. You know, you can still have the big rallies. You can still, you know, shake hands with the Prime Minister of Canada. You know, all those things that you want to do all that. But, you know, maybe just put the phone down for a weekend, just one weekend. See how it makes you feel, you know?
Yeah, that's not going
to
happen.
I mean, by all intentions, this is a guy who doesn't like to work all that hard. You know, this is like, consider if he could believe that Twitter is work for him, you know, it's like, well, then, you know, it's part of your job. He's like, all right, well, I'm playing golf. You know, you can put it down. So I don't know. I don't think that that's something that we could imagine is forthcoming, him putting down the phone and stopping to tweet.
No, that's not
going to
happen.
But, you know, on the one hand, it sometimes makes things more entertaining because you can't believe he tweeted it. Mm-hmm. And then other times you're like, oh, wait a minute. That's us. That's our country right there in that tweet. I can sometimes be a little bit concerned. Chelsea, what I wanted to ask you, what happens at this point in the game, and unfortunately it is a game to some people, if President Trump tries to fire Mueller, like right now? There was a point where he probably could have done it and it would have not been a great thing, but he would have been able to walk it off. This is the point where I think it's getting to be impossible to fire him.
Two things happen.
Yeah.
You have turnout like you've never seen in the midterm
elections.
Yeah. And then you see Republicans starting to talk impeachment. In fact, Senator Graham said today, if he fires them without cause, which I can't even begin to imagine what kind of cause Trump would manufacture to justify firing Mueller. I thought it was funny that Paul Ryan said he had assurances. Really? Well, I don't know what kind of assurances would make me believe that Trump was or was not going to do anything. But I think that's when you have Republicans start using the word impeachment.
Yeah. And look, I mean, historically, assurances, there's no reason to believe that assurances won't be followed through. I mean, just ask Neville Chamberlain. It went very well for him, all the assurances that he got. He had a very prosperous reign. So, and, you know, that is just a joke. I'm not in the habit of comparing the current president, whoever they may be, to Hitler, because there's plenty of people out there who do that. That was just a joke. It's okay. Everybody, nobody needs to be that upset for it. But your thoughts, Dr. Metzler, what if President Trump is like, I don't care what everybody's telling me. I'm firing this guy. I'm firing him today. I'm going to do it in a tweet. I'm going to @mention @specialprosk. I'm going to just tweet it out. And it's like, you're fired. It'll be like a little meme from a picture from The Apprentice.
Yeah, that won't be good.
I don't think it would be good. But,
no, I don't think it would be good. And I do agree with you, Chelsea. I think at that point, Republicans start to say, okay, we've gone about as far as we can go here. And so at this point, the firing of a special prosecutor without cause is problematic for any president. And I don't think this president is any different. I mean, what has happened is there's been a case built up against Mueller by a number of people. But there is no cause, as far as I can tell, to fire Mueller. And again, with the tweets, when you say that this whole team is a Democratic team,
with Mueller as a registered Republican,
it just creates
McCabe and Comey.
It just kind of doesn't look good,
right? And also, I would add, one, it's not easy to do because you have to fire, have Rod Rosenstein resign,
right?
Then, if he doesn't do it, it goes down the line. You know, it keeps going down the line till whoever does it. And then you're already looking at that, like you're saying, that it's politically motivated. And then all the evidence that's already there doesn't just go away. It's still in the DOJ. It either becomes an FBI case, either goes back to the DOJ, another special counsel is put together. So it doesn't just disappear, and it just gives him a lot more trouble than it's worth. Because like you said, Chelsea, and like you said, Dr. Metzler, it's like now you have people running out in the midterms that are like, we're done with this. And now you're going to be in an impeachment, you know, trial for the next year or so, being distracted. So it would not do anything. It would not do him any good at all. So I think, you know, hopefully, you know, enough people are telling him, so far they have, that it's not in his best interest to do that and just let it run its course.
All it's going to take is, well, depending on your perspective, either the wrong person or, for President Trump, the right person to say, no, you have to do this. He has to be, you know, just one person can convince him that that's what he needs to do. And then he can ignore the, you know, 100 other people. In the chat, the Demonaut says that the impeachment will not happen because that that would require Republicans to destroy their own party. I think that there, and I don't know, Dr. Metzler, you can tell me if I'm right in this. I think that there are Republicans, especially conservatives, who feel that that's already happened, that the thing that might fix the party would be a little bit less Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, and in fact, there are a number of Republicans who have just said, you know, we're very close to a bridge too far. There are a number of Republicans who have said that. And also, I think there's the reality of the midterms in 2018. I mean, those are around the corner. Mm-hmm. Of course, I don't necessarily believe the polls. The polls are, they're all over the place relative to that. But in fact, I think if Democrats take over the House, then in fact, impeachment is inevitable. Mm-hmm. The question would be removal. And the only way removal would work would be if Democrats also took over the Senate.
Right.
Or you get a couple of Jeff Flakes.
Well, yeah. You need enough Republicans. You need 67 to be able to have removal. So you definitely need Republicans.
Yeah, you would need Republicans to be able to do that. But, and so it largely depends on you know what the outcome of the midterms
are. I think Pence
would do it. He's like, yeah, Pence is like, hey, that means I get that job.
Pence is like, oh, I need to be the tiebreaker. How am I going to vote for that? I wonder what's in my best interest. But what? Anybody knows anything about Pence, it'll be dependent on what mother tells him he needs to do to vote. We are going to take one more quick break, and when we come back, we're going to send our congratulations to Vladimir Putin.
Oy.
What? he won a re-election. I'm sure.
By a landslide.
I'm sure it was a landslide.
It was.
I'm sure that that happened because of American meddling in their election. That's my guess. I think that's why that happened. They wanted to keep Putin in charge. Anyway, we will talk about that and a few other key topics right after this. Welcome back to the Trump Report. Christian Blatt, Chelsea Galicia, Scott Moore, and Dr. Christopher Metzler, who is at Dr. Chris Metzler on Twitter, drchristophermetzler.com. All right.
Yeah, we'll fix that.
We'll fix it. But for right now, that's how they
That's
how
what
find
it is.
It. Yeah. At some point, there'll be consistency. As I mentioned before the break, there, of course, were congratulations in order for Vladimir Putin. There are those who felt that the people congratulating him maybe shouldn't have been the American president. I have a tweet in my hand from Senator John McCain. An American president does not lead the free world by congratulating dictators on winning sham elections. And by doing so with Vladimir Putin, President Trump insulted every Russian citizen who was denied the right to vote in a free and fair election. That sounds like fake news to me. But, Dr. Metzler, your thoughts on President Trump calling Putin for the congratulations and Senator McCain's response?
Well, first, in the interest of full disclosure, I was on the faculty at the Presidential Academy in Russia for a while, so let's just get
So if you want to keep that job, should you be really careful? If you want
I'm
to be
no longer there.
Okay, all right.
So let's just get that clear. But I think from the standpoint of a U.S. president, it's not necessary. Again, it's one of those things where, okay, so he won. Did we expect him to lose?
And right.
Why are you congratulating him? I mean, most likely, if he lost, people would probably end up, I don't know, dead. But besides that, I just don't think it's a good idea. It's the president of the United States saying congratulations because you won in a system that was designed for you to win. Not so much.
Scott, according to the Washington Post, a.k.a. fake news, President Trump ignored warnings from his national security advisors when he congratulated Putin, including a section in his briefing materials in all capital letters that said, do not congratulate. That's not particularly surprising, but your thoughts sort of on the congratulations, particularly in the face of, hey, don't do this.
Well, he's got to keep his boss happy and he's got to kiss up, so why wouldn't he?
He wants a raise when it comes
time for
his
annual review.
His new contract, yeah.
But, you know, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, of course, this morning said, oh, Obama did the same thing in 2012. And, you know, he did talk to Angela Merkel last week with her fourth term. And, you know, she was trying to say that it's important because he's still part of the world stage. And it was just really fascinating to listen to her try to twist it around. But, yeah, like you're saying, Dr. Metzler, it just wasn't necessary. We knew the outcome. It wasn't a surprise. There was no reason really to go behind it and have to go out of his way to make that call. So,
I mean, do I play devil's advocate?
Please do.
He's going to say, well, I was really wanted to get on a good page with him so we can discuss the arms race. Who calls it the arms race? Like, that's,
and
like,
that's so Cold War.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the key point that I did want to make. He did spin this to say that he wants to discuss the arms race. It's getting out of control. Is it getting out of control? Because it seemed like there's not really a proliferation of more. You know, just it's not. I don't feel like the arms race with Russia is out of control. Maybe I'm wrong. I think that if anything, the hacking, and I'm not specifically talking about the election, but anybody who has a computer, you know, it's not that hard to follow the cookies to back to Russia. There's a lot of, you know, interference in just my email, Russia. That's right. What do you think, Chelsea? That you think that he honestly believes that we're still at the height of the Cold War, or does he think that the base thinks that?
I have no idea. If I could get into his brain, I'm not even sure that I would. But I don't know. Does he believe that Putin's going to help him with Kim Jong-un? I don't know, because that's who we're really...
those are the arms that I'm worried about.
Yeah.
You know, those flabby little dangly arms that he has is a joke. But
I mean, can you imagine if we have Kim Jong-un, Putin, and Trump all together, what kind of photo op that would be?
Wow. Yeah, that's...
Very disturbing.
That's like when Spider-Man has to take on the Sinister Six and they're all in one place together. That's for my Marvel TV News friends that happen to watch this show as well. What do you think, Scott? Is the arms race just... does he believe it? Let's put it that way. Does he think that... Or does he just feel like, it's something that I heard somebody say at some point in the last 30...
Somewhere in the last
35 years. Right. Yeah. So, congrats on that, I suppose. One thing that I saw you post about, Dr. Metzler, was there's a lot of attention on this portrait of Sarah Huckabee Sanders that Jim Carrey's doing.
Yeah.
And there are people who don't like Sarah Huckabee Sanders who are probably more inclined to say, like, well, that's actually really funny. Me personally... I didn't get Ace Ventura. I don't know what all the fuss was about, but he was funny on In Living Color, you know, 25 years ago. What do you think about that? Is it the fact that she's a conservative woman? Is that why it's okay to ridicule her?
Yeah, I mean, look, Sarah does the best that she can in an extremely difficult situation. And I think what you've seen from Sarah recently is what she's learned is a lot from Sean Spicer. So she doesn't just get out there and say random stuff. She basically says, I've not spoken to the president about that, which is exactly the posture that I would take. And so that portrait of her, I thought, was extremely disgusting. I thought it was an extremely poor taste and not something that should be done. It was very offensive to me.
And when, you know, that sort of gets to the same issues, you know, where there were tweets early in the president's administration, you know, calling out photos of his 10-year-old son. And, you know, there are lines that you don't get to cross just because you don't like someone.
Yeah.
You know, and even though people like really, really, really don't like President Trump, I don't know, Scott, do you think that if, say, well, let's use a fictional Democratic press secretary. If this happened to, say, Democratic press secretary C.J. Craig in the in the Bartlett White House, what do you think the reaction would be to an actor who singled out a Democratic female press secretary?
I don't personally, because it wouldn't be something I would do. But it goes back to like Kathy Griffin with Trump head and. These people trying to feel like they're being edgy with art and everything. I don't personally agree with it, but I also think there's a fine line, because then you're saying, yeah, you're right, because then it's saying, now you're starting to censor people, and it would happen on both sides, and I think you're right. It wouldn't be. It's a slippery slope. But I don't like the idea of censoring either, because so I do feel like it's fair game if it was the other way around. And it's much like Trump too with his tweets about Micah from Morning Joe and all the other comments he makes about women. I know he didn't draw, but Lord knows we don't want to see him draw because it's probably like stick figures. But
personally, I'd be very interested. I would love to see what he
draws.
But
it's still the same kind of thing, and I think, you know, the ridicule has to be on both sides there, because what he also does is inappropriate as well, and that needs to be called out. But I agree with you. I don't think it was appropriate. I wouldn't have personally done it, but I also don't feel like we should be in the business of now censoring people from being able to make these caricatures, even if they are in poor taste.
Well, Chelsea, I now realize, of course, the way to pose this question would have been to ask the woman first. But obviously, I'm still part of the patriarchy, and I apologize to you for that. But I will still I will let you go last. No, I should have asked you. I was trying to be nice to our guest.
Yes.
And you went back this way.
And then I went this way. But I realized now I should have asked you first. What do you think about all this? That's a no. Just I've done that before.
I think I'm totally with Scott. You can't say shouldn't have done that, because now you're infringing on First Amendment, and none of us want to be the PC people shutting up the people from saying or doing art that's expressing themselves. That's one hand. On the other hand, if the point was to be helpful towards something, it was not helpful. I don't understand the utility of it. If his self-expression was the most important thing to him, okay, fine. But I hope that we're just trying to be helpful in re-engaging democracy, restoring democracy, and that that's the goal. Then he should not have done it. But I can't say what his goal was.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I even try my very best, because I have thoughts when I see and hear Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and I just try and not go there. I go to what is she saying? How competent is she at her job? Mm-hmm. I want to go to the merits of anybody doing their job, male or female, and leave out anything that has to do with appearance or gender or anything of that nature.
Right, and I think that the question isn't as much about Jim Carrey making the painting. It's sort of the coverage of it and sort of the reaction to it. Hey, look at this. Isn't this funny? I mean, that sort of thing.
Could he have done it and kept it to himself?
Well, I mean, at what point in Jim Carrey's career has he done something to keep it to himself?
Right. You know? No attention? No.
Yeah, but no, I mean, look, it's a good point.
Yeah.
And, you know, on a similar note, I also think that, you know, there have been some, it's more posts, but there's been some media coverage of Donald Trump Jr.'s divorce that are sort of very happily dealing with that, when you do need to take into consideration that, you know, there is a real family at stake there, and, you know, divorce is very painful for anyone to have to deal with. So even though you don't like Donald Trump, and maybe you don't even like his son, it's still, like, not something to be like, oh, this is great. Now, the problem is, you want to take that stance, but then you're like, oh, yeah, but, you know, there was supposedly an affair with a Celebrity Apprentice contestant. So then you get all caught up in the media aspect of it. But at the same time,
I went to college with Aubrey.
You went to college with Aubrey O'Day?
Yeah, we're the same year.
Was she voted most likely to be a homewrecker?
I would say actually, okay, so we were both in the Greek.
Wow, that's the fact that you didn't say no pretty much tells us everything we need to know at this point.
Wow.
Right after I gave that answer about Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Well, let me just say that we were both in the Greek system, so although she and I were not friends, we were still in that same, you know, world. And she was always a bit provocative, and girls were always a little, like, weary of her. And I... also in the Greek system was a friend who actually moved in with me after college, just as a friend, who grew up with her. And he would say, girls think Aubrey's a slut, but she's really not. But she presents in a way that gave people that impression. So I think people that know her, and this was before, I mean, she left UC Irvine to go do the Diddy show. I can't remember what was it called? Making the Band?
That was called Making the Band. Yeah.
And that's when she left school. And this, she now is sort of just a hyper version of what she was back then. I don't know. I didn't know her, but certainly the appearance was, this isn't shocking.
Right. Well, you know, look, I can see how that would be your perspective. A little inside knowledge. Thank you, Chelsea. Dr. Metzler, as we wind up here, as we're almost out of time, how do you balance sort of this I don't like this public figure, but there is that line of their private life or maybe their personal appearance and those things. Why is it so hard for people to, you know, stop short of like, oh, this is going to make people who I don't, you know, this will make like basically innocent bystanders feel bad. I should probably back off of, you know, ridiculing a divorce.
Well, because, you know, look, we are a society in which we like the drama. Mm-hmm. We like the salaciousness. We like all of that kind of stuff. So it's like, yeah, and this helps me with the fact, it helps me justify the fact that I don't like this person. This is further fodder, mm-hmm. And it helps me justify why I don't like that person, which is sad, but it's the state in which we find ourselves.
Well, with that, we are indeed out of time. Thank you, Dr. Metzler.
My pleasure.
At Dr. Chris Metzler, drchristophermetzler.com.
Correct.
All right. And we appreciate you making the time to see us again. Please, my pleasure. Please come back next time you're in town.
I'll be here soon.
We will be back next Tuesday. I'm not quite sure which time. Maybe this time, maybe a little later. Stay tuned at Trump Report ABTV on Twitter to find out when and where we're at. And you can follow me at Christian DMZ. Chelsea, where do people find you?
At Chelsea Galicia.
So simple. And Scott?
At SMANandy. Not simple.
But short, so findable. Yeah, because there's a million Scott Moores. Anyway, thanks so much to everybody who joined us in the chat. Thanks to everyone at AfterBuzz TV and America's Voice. And we will indeed see you next Tuesday. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.